everybody. My name is Katie, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much, Billy, for asking me to come out and speak. It's definitely an honor to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank my friends for making the journey, the trek with me up here. I don't know, I was just thinking when we were just talking before, like you're saying how people from my home group are like accountable and you know they're going to show up, or I was just like, I was thinking today when I was on the way, I was like, I was never somebody who could show up for anything, like let alone like have to drive somewhere, you know, far away or just show up, like my word meant nothing, like if I didn't feel like showing up for something, you would never see me, you know, not a phone call, not anything, and so I don't know, it's just, it's a gift to see things changing, and that's only as a result of being sober in AA. So I'm just grateful for that. And my sobriety date is January 17th, 2001, and I have a sponsor and a home group, and I don't know, I guess I'll just start off, you know, kind of from the beginning. I grew up in a family where a lot of people were drinking, but I don't know if they're necessarily alcoholic, but I grew up in the bar scene, singing karaoke, hanging out in the sandbox outside the dugout at slow-pitch softball games, you know, a lot of people drinking beer, a lot of people carrying on, so I just grew up with this, like, love of atmosphere and partying, and so I was, like, sneaking drinks, and people were giving me sips off their beers or their wine or whatever since I was, like, really little. So we have some family stories of me. Like, one time I was choking on Goldfish crackers, and I was, like, turning blue, and they're like, here, and they gave me a beer because that's all there was around, and I, like, chugged the whole thing and was, like, so happy and, like, had, like, crumbs on me and, like, beer, and so I don't know if that necessarily makes me alcoholic. I don't know. Maybe it does, actually. But alcohol was just always, like, a main player in my life growing up. Like, it was just always there, and I thought it was so glamorous or so magical, and it made everyone so happy, and it just seemed so adult, and I couldn't wait to get that magic feeling for myself, you know? And so I remember whenever I take a drink, just feeling, like, special. And I always sort of sought that out. Like, if people treated me like all the other kids, I would cry. I'd feel awful. Like, I had to be treated extra special just to feel, like, okay. So yeah, like I said, like, I was, like, singing karaoke in the bars. People were like, you're so cute. You know, always had to be, like, center stage. And so, but growing up, you know, when you go to school, like, you're just one of many kids, so you're not, like, special anymore. So a lot of times, like, I just feel, like, sad, or people would make fun of me or something because I was chubby, and I'd be like, oh, you know, and just like normal kid stuff. But looking back, I just always felt like in some way, like, there was kind of something wrong with me, or I don't know. And I, my father, like, ended up drinking a lot, and he would get in bar fights sometimes. It wasn't so funny all the time. And one time he, like, smashed my birthday cake the night before my party and, like, hit my mom. And everyone was crying. And he was just like, the next day I was like, hey, drunk man. And he was like, don't ever say that. And he was like, it's not going to happen again. Like, it was just because I was drunk. It doesn't count, you know. And so I was like, oh, so the things you do when you're drinking don't count? And I was like, okay. So I just somehow, like, planted that in the back of my brain for many years to come. And but the thing was, is my dad, like, really cut back on his drinking. That never happened again. He's a wonderful dad. Like, many people in the program know him. Claire and I were just joking because I celebrated 10 years in January, and both my parents drove, like, 2 hours to come to my home group, and he's, like, out there shaking hands, like, meeting everybody, like, socializing around the room. My home group's, like, really big and probably overwhelming to most people, but he's just that kind of guy. So, anyway, so growing up, I was, like, successful on all outside appearances. I was really involved. Like, I played sports. I loved sports. I did music and acting and theater and band, like, every single thing you could think of. I was in the Kids Against Drugs Club, which I thought was really funny. And so this is all, like, you know, young behavior. And it's like, what does this have to do with alcoholism? But I was, like, going around from school to school, like, singing and dancing about why you shouldn't drink and do drugs, while the whole time I was, like, drinking with my family, not, like, connecting the dots. And then one day I was like, oh, my gosh, are they talking about the alcohol that I'm drinking? Like, it, like, never crossed until this one day. And that's, like, my first memory of, like, reality crossing, you know, and just realizing, like, maybe this isn't, like, that normal. And, but again, you know, that was really young. And so I, you know, kept growing up, kept staying involved in these activities, but I switched schools and just started changing my image. I mean, that's a big thing for me. Like, I love trying to be who I think you want me to be. So it was almost like costumes. Like, I would dress in these weird, funky clothes and just try to act, like, different. You know, whoever I was around, I would act like them. And I didn't know, you know, who I was. I'd be like, oh, so everyone in school at that time was like, are you a G or are you a skater? And I was like, I guess I'm a G. And so, which is, like, so ridiculous. And so basically they're like, we're these, like, gangster people, but I'm from, you know, Fairfax County, Virginia, so it's not really that gangster or anything. So, but anyways, like, I started hanging out with this guy. Like, he got in a huge fight at school. He was the biggest, most popular guy in school, and he accidentally, like, slammed me into the locker because I was, like, in the way, and then I, like, hit the locker, and I was like, I'm in love. Like, this guy is amazing. And so that's probably, like, a red flag, but I just thought he was the coolest. And he ended up getting deported or, like, sent to jail in Bolivia or something. I don't know. He ended up being able to come back in the country, so I don't know. But he was gone for, like, a couple years. But during that time, I started leading double, triple, quadruple lives, like, just started lying. I still had the outsides kind of together. I was playing softball really competitively and, like, traveling around the country and practicing 7 days a week, working out, so I really didn't get to drink, like, as much as I probably would have wanted to, but, you know, things were just, like, going okay, but I started sneaking out, like, every night. And I would come home, like, crawling through the window at, like, 6 in the morning when my alarm clock's going off for school, and just going out and putting myself in really dangerous situations. Like, I would end up meeting all these guys, like, thinking I'm so mature at, like, 13 years old. But really, like, when you're 13, like, now I see 13-year-olds, they seem like babies to me, but these guys, like, from Andrews Air Force Base would, like, pick me up and, like, we'd go drinking. I mean, that was when I was more, like, 15, 16, but just that whole, like, lifestyle, you know, I loved sneaking around, I loved being bad, you know, but, like, on the other hand, I love approval, so, like, if I ever got caught, I'd be devastated, but, like, I just love being wrong, I don't know why, just, like, crazy stuff, excitement, adrenaline, I just chased that for so long, you know, and around that time, you know, I had made this top choir, you know, I was pitching, I was doing all these things, but then I blew out my shoulder at the national tournament in Oklahoma, and that was pretty devastating, and I had to start taking, like, a lot of pain pills to manage the pain, but I would, like, save them up and then drink on them and think it was funny, and my friends would look at me like, what's your problem, you know, and I just thought, what's the big deal? Because I had a friend, she had a cold, and she was like, oh, I can't drink tonight because I took some Sudafed earlier. And I was like, really? Because I'm on all these, like, pain narcotics, and I drink on them all the time. And everyone was just like, oh, my God. And so there were little moments like that where I learned, like, I really can't tell everybody what's really going on in my head or, like, what I'm really doing, you know. And like I said, those, like, double and triple lives, like, not one person knew the full truth about me, you know, and, like, in the doctor's opinion, like, it talks about being, like, full flight from reality. I mean, I feel like those words describe me to a T, because I lived in this, like, fantasy land of who I am, who I'm going to be, and the type of person I am, and it was not, my actions did not meet that dream, you know. I was living like a loser and thinking I'm a winner, you know, like, thinking I'm such a nice, good person, but little by little, my actions started to get worse and worse, and, so I guess around this time, like, that's when my drinking really took off. So I blew out my shoulder. I got kicked off. I, like, started going to high school, and I got kicked off my high school team for having a bad attitude and not showing up to practice. You know, I thought I was going to be a professional softball player, so getting kicked off, like, all these dreams I had of getting a college scholarship were gone, and so there just wasn't really a whole lot going for me then. And the guy, Tony, like, came back from Bolivia around that time, so I would hang out with him and, like, all of his cousins. For some reason, they would all say that they're related, but it'd be like 30 of us, and I would just, he lived like across the street from my high school, so I'd just walk over there, and it'd just be like a smoky, cloudy room, and like walk in through the haze, and like everyone's like drinking 40s, and like catching each other in the kitchen, or like showing off like their new tasers and stuff, and I'm just like, oh, hey guys, like I'm here, and which is like so funny, because I would try to act, like, tough or whatever, but they also just laughed at me because I'm so, like, not tough. Like, they just kept me around because it was, like, amusing, kind of. And he was just like, you're my homegirl. Like, I love you and all this stuff. But, like, he would go out with other girls. It was just so insane, you know. And but, like, how we became good friends was, like, he drank, like, I think almost, like, a fifth of Southern Comfort, passed out in the woods, and his friends just, like, left him there, and he's, like, throwing up, and I ended up, like, finding him and, like, rolling him over and dragging him through the woods and, like, driving him home, even though I'd been drinking, even though I was 15, didn't have a driver's license, dropped him off on the porch, and so he was like, I got your back for life, girl, like, so that's, like, how we, like, formed a friendship, you know, like, it's so crazy, and, but the way he drank, I loved it, because, like, sometimes I've heard people mention, like, lower companions. Like, I was with all the, like, preppy kids, like, the athletes and everything. And, yeah, like, people would drink. But they didn't, like, get down with drinking like I wanted to, you know. So with this guy, like, I would just get hammered drunk. And, I mean, I was also, I wasn't really even that, like, overweight, but I would get so upset because I would drink so much, and, like, even these, like, huge guys would be, like, passing out. I'm like, who's next? You know, I'd drink people under the table, and I would secretly feel so bad because, like, all my little cheerleader friends would, like, pass out after two beers, and I would just, like, hammer liquor and be fine. I was like, it's because I'm chubby, like, but really it's because I'm alcoholic, and there's something about my blood or something that just, like, loves alcohol so much. And, like, I could metabolize it, I don't know. And I was, like, kind of a blackout drinker, but not every time. And, like, I almost never threw up from drinking. I mean, I did, of course, but not like all my other girlfriends were doing. So I ended up that year, I just got really depressed. Like, everything got really dark. For some reason, like, the third quarter of school, I just seemed to fall apart, you know. My old sponsor used to joke that if I were an Indian chief, my name would be Good Starter, Bad Long Distance. And so, yeah, so, like, by the time third quarter would come around, I'd be, like, out of gas and just miserable. And so I really hit a bottom around that time and was I'm, like, very prone to, like, suicidal thinking, and I wasn't going to school. I was saying I was having headaches, every single day. They were like, you might have a brain tumor, wasn't showing up for school, and, but it was all a lie. Like, I just didn't want to leave my room. Like, now I know that was the bondage of self, but at the time, I was just like, I can't leave my room. I don't know what you want from me, and, because I couldn't face the world sober, you know, and, so I ended up trying to kill myself. Went crazy. Like, my parents came down on me because I started failing all my classes, and I had never even had, like, a C before, so that was a huge drop-off for me, and so I was like, fine, you know, I'm just going to kill myself, and the day that I decided I wanted to kill myself, we watched the Dead Poets Society in English class, and, like, there's a guy named Neil who kills himself in that movie, so I was like, it's a sign, but, so anyway, I lost my mind and, like, carved the letter N in my arm, and just, like, lost my mind and, like, tried to overdose on pills and everything. And that was, like, probably 12 years ago. And I, like, still have, like, a scar on my arm. But I only say that because it's just, like, who does that, you know? Like, I did, you know, just, like, so nuts, you know, and I had no tools for living, you know. My parents yell at me, like, my tool for living is, like, end my life, you know. I mean, that doesn't really make sense. And so the next day, my mom dragged me to school, and my friend was like, what's wrong with you? Because I was still so messed up from, like, trying to overdose or whatever, and she rushed me to the school counselor, and then the school, like, rushed me to the mental hospital. So, for me back then, like, I don't know about you all, but I didn't know anybody who went to the mental hospital back then. Like, I didn't really even know people who were, like, in therapy or on medicines or anything. So I was just like, oh my God, like, I can't believe this is happening to me. So it was, like, a big deal, but my parents ended up being like, our daughter is just sad, she's not crazy. Because, like, when they came to visit me, I swear this is the truth, a man was, like, dressed up as a bird in the lobby of the mental hospital, just, like, squawking and running around. So they were like, oh my gosh, we're not leaving our daughter here. So, I don't know, like, I think that's kind of funny, but I ended up getting sent to therapy, and my therapist happened to be 26 years sober in AA, and I just, like, love that woman so much. She passed away in 2005, but she totally and completely saved my life. I mean, up to that point, I felt like no one in the world understood me. There's something wrong with me. I was just holding my breath for so long, like, trying to be successful, trying to be a good person. Like, I didn't want to be, like, some bad alcoholic. I wanted to be good, you know, but for some reason, I just couldn't follow through with my actions. And she just gave me hope for the first time. And she was the first person that I ever related to and knew that she related to me, too. And I really strive to be like her because I can't really explain it, but, like, when she looked at me, it was like she didn't see this, like, broken person who I was then. Like, she saw, like, the God in me, and she saw, like, who I could be. And so, like, the reflection of her eyes of, like, when I would talk to her, I just felt like she loved me so much, like, unconditionally. And so I try to remember that and, like, try to see the God in other people now, today, even though it can be hard, you know, maybe when I have 26 years, like she did, but, so I just had this, like, safe lady in my corner, but was continuing to drink, and she had told me to go to AA, and she would just suggest it weekly. She did that for 3 years, but she never, pressured me. She never said, you're messed up. She never said, you know, you have to go or anything. Like, she never, even though I would tell her every week, yeah, yeah, I'm going to go, and then never would and feel so guilty because of it. Like, she never made me feel, like, ashamed or bad about it. Like, she was like, when the time is right, she's like, don't worry. And she always just had faith that when the time was right that I would go to AA. And so I ended up, I mean, I have so many crazy drinking stories. Like, I got sober pretty young, you know, but I hit a bottom. I really think spiritually, of course, and emotionally, and mentally, I mean, I was just not, like, a person who could function in society. And physically, like, I didn't have, like, the DTs or anything, but I was pretty broken. I mean, like I said, you know, like, I used to sneak out and, like, put myself, like, I worked at a bar with my older sister. We'd, like, sneak out with all these guys. And, you know, when you're young and, like, you're drinking and getting so, like, out of your mind drunk just to take a breath, you know, like, you just end up in bad situations. And so, but that's what it was. I mean, for so long, like, my friends, we'd be like, yeah, like, drinking's like going on vacation but never leaving the basement. Like, it's awesome. Like, I literally felt like that. Like, my day, I could be, like, I'm a loser, my parents can't stand me, like, my friends suck, like, I have no future. And then I'd, like, take a drink and be like, well, maybe tomorrow, like, things will be okay, you know? And, like, I'd take a couple more drinks and be like, I am so awesome, like, I'm doing so good. Like, you guys are, like, lucky that I'm in your life, you know? And because when I take a drink, like I am broken. Like, I'm still broken today. Like, my alcoholism didn't stop on my sobriety date. The story of my drinking stopped on my sobriety date, but the story of my alcoholism continues today. So I'm broken, but when I would take a drink, it felt like all the cracks inside me would fill up, you know, and I'd feel whole again. But then, you know, the cracks would get bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'd have to drink more and more, and it was just like my soul was like being corroded away, you know, and I was seeking something. I was like seeking a solution, and I was seeking it in the bottle, and I had no idea, you know, and I would say, like, I'm not going to drink today, because my therapist was like, maybe you should try this. Try to not drink for 1 month and try this prayer called the Serenity Prayer. Say it every day and see what happens. She was, like, putting these little, like, snippets in my life. I have no idea. I was trying it, you know. I did not drink for a month, but I was doing other substances, so I didn't realize that wasn't really sober. Yeah, like, they're just these little things, you know, and one of the things that, I don't know, it's just sometimes there are those moments, like, you know, I would drink and drink and drink, consequences would happen, I feel guilt or more shame, then I have to drink to cover that up, you know, it was just always this cycle of just, like, trying to bury the stuff I was doing, and, like, one night I snuck out, and that was, like, when caller ID had first come out. So my mom was like, call me when you get to your girlfriend's house and let me know. And I called her from my cell phone. She's like, no, no, call me when you get there. And so I worked up this, like, huge scheme, this huge lie. And ended up going to this party. Ended up doing tons of whatever with all these, you know, I was out with all these guys, just drunk out of my mind. And, my grandfather passed away that night, so my mom called that girl's house to come get me, and they were like, they were just like, we don't know what you're talking about. So my mom was like so upset. At that point, she was just kind of like, I guess, I don't know if the word's denial, but she was just like, she would never assume I was doing what I was doing, you know? And so they called the police looking for me, thinking I'm kidnapped. And they found me the next day, like, in this guy's basement, like, on a mattress on the floor with bottles everywhere and, like, paraphernalia and, like, just passed out, you know, like, 1 in the afternoon and, like, didn't know where my phone was. Like, it was just ugly. And my mom was just like, you disgust me. Like, we've been so worried about you. Like, your grandfather died and, like, we haven't been able to, like, grieve because we're looking for you, and, like, this is what you're doing, like, this is such, like, they were just like, you're done, like, you disgust us, and, so I was just like, whatever, you know, like, you don't know, that's, like, what I put up, but I felt awful. Like, that night, we ended up going to this, like, church service, and I wasn't really someone who, like, frequented church or anything, but we, like, went to the service. It happened to be, like, Good Friday, and so I've actually gone to that same service, like, every year, so it's been, like, 11 years now. I go just because, I don't know, I feel like it's just a good action. I don't know, like, to kind of help with the amends of my grandfather, but I used to, like, go to parties after that and, like, drink and, like, lay on the grass and be like, I'm sorry, I'm such a loser, granddad. Like, I just felt like he could see me from the sky and just, like, I was just so ashamed. Like, I live to drink. All those good activities, like, all the fun things, like, my spirit, like, I can be, like, pretty joyful and happy and energetic, but that was all, like, crushed out of me by the time I came to AA. And, so, you know, like I said, you know, lots of drinking stories. I was working at a bar. Finally, to wrap it up a little bit, in 2000, so December 2000, like around Christmas, like about a month before I got sober, I was arguing with my sister on Christmas Eve, and my mom had gotten me a stereo for Christmas that I did not want. So I was throwing a tantrum at 16 years old saying, you're on my Christmas. I didn't even want this stereo. I told you what I wanted, you know, which is, like, shocking to me now. Like, I could never imagine doing that now, but I'm just like, that's how I was. I was just so selfish. Like, this is about me. You didn't even get me what I wanted. What kind of mother are you? You know, crazy. And so my family's just like, get out of our sight, you know, like, we were all fighting. I mean, my sister and I would have fist fights. I tried to take a baseball bat to her car. My mom read my journal, so I stole it from her and threw gasoline on it and lit it on fire in the front yard. I mean, that's like a family picture of the Thompson house. So Christmas Eve, like, I snuck out with some guys from the bar, and that was around the time where I tried to not drink for 1 month. I lost like 30 pounds. I was like, I'm getting my life together, I'm pulling myself up by my bootstraps, you know, I'm doing so good with life now, like, everything's better. And I snuck out, and these guys were like, here, do you want some liquor? And I was like, sure, you know. And I did not think that that was powerlessness. I had gone out saying, I will not drink tonight, but when it was in front of me, when the opportunity and desire crossed, I said, it's Christmas, you know? My family's mad at me. I'm alone. Like, I deserve just one drink. I need to just, you know, take the edge off, you know? And it was that thinking, you know, that insanity that precedes the first drink. And so I took the first drink, and then I took the rest of the bottle, and then I blacked out. And so I came to the next day on Christmas Day, I think around 1 p.m., with my dad, like, shaking me, and I had, like, mascara down my face and, like, leaves in my hair and, like, throw up all over me, and I was wearing someone else's clothes and didn't know where I was. And so it was just, like, again, like, one of those moments where reality just smacked me in the forehead, because I was, like, trying with my will the best I possibly could to improve my life, to get better, to get happy, to stop drinking, to be a good daughter, to be, you know, the best that I could be, and that was, like, what happened, you know, and so I, like, missed Christmas, and, you know, the reality was, like, really ugly, you know, like, I had snuck out with guys one more time, and, like, it just caught up with me, and, you know, stuff happened that I never would have wanted to happen, and, I was just, like, this was the best, I was trying my hardest, and, like, this is what happened, so I ended up, like, drinking the rest of the week, and almost the same thing happened again. I went out with a bunch of guys again, drinking away my troubles, but that time, like, I wasn't blacked out and ended up leaving, and it was okay, but, you know, my last drink was on New Year's Eve, actually. I was still working at the bar. My friends were like, yeah, we're going to this party. I was like, where is it? They're like, we'll call you. You know, I get off my shift, and they did not call me. No one cared. They're all drinking. I mean, my friends, like, we would go to a party and follow each other. They'd drive, like, 100 miles an hour, and, like, you'd never see them again. Like, you know, or, like, I would be fumbling through my purse, and they'd already be inside. Like, so my friends, like, we weren't really that great of friends, really. And my parents didn't want me around. And the only person left was, like, my teenage cousins. And my aunt called them and begged them, I found out later, to let me come to their party. I came wearing a big cowboy hat. I don't know why. A black cowboy hat. Like, all black clothes. And I was like, you guys are, like, lucky I'm here. And I was like, give me that bottle. And I just, like, started drinking. And I was like, you, like, you're going to be my guy tonight. And he, like, passed out, like, really early in the night, and I was like, oh, my gosh. So I just, like, stole his lighter and, like, went through his wallet while he's passed out. I was like, oh, well, I'm going to go get some cigarettes. So I, like, went driving. I'm, like, drunk and driving. And, like, I got back, and, like, the ball dropped, and, like, all my cousins, like, were casually, like, playing beer pong and just, like, happy and, like, yay with their friends, and I'm just, like, completely miserable, and, like, no one even cared. And, like, I remember watching the ball drop on this, like, 13-inch TV, and, like, no one in the world cared to know where I was, you know, like, nobody really wanted me around because of how the person that I was, how selfish and unbearable I was. So, you know, that night wasn't, like, the worst night, but I just knew, like, it's over. Like, I'm trying the best I can, and I don't know what to do. So I kept calling this girl who my therapist had recommended, and she was my age, and she was sober. And eventually, 2 weeks later, she took me to my first meeting. And I've been sober, like, since that day, since January 17, 2001. And so, like, after a couple weeks of going to AA, I showed up to see my therapist, and I was like, you knew all along. And I just thought it was so funny, because I was like, this Like, when I went to my first meeting, like, there were all these girls, like, greeting me, and everyone's like, welcome, you know, and they said, and for the most important person, 24 hours, and I was like, they know that I'm the most important person. This is so nice. And I don't know, it's so crazy. And, like, I poured my heart out, hysterically crying at the meeting, like, and, because if you had asked me, like, I did not know that my problem, alcoholism, like, I just thought, like, oh, that's my Aunt Joyce, who's, like, always slurring her words and, like, falling down, like, she's an old drunk, you know? But, like, for me, I didn't think that I had alcoholism. I'm like, my problems are this, 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 and this. Like, alcohol just, like, makes me feel better, you know? Like, that's a good time right there. Like, that's not the problem, you know? And, you know, it talks on the book, like, the alcoholic life seems to be the only normal one. Like, I would compare myself to other people, but people who were doing far worse, so the bar was set pretty low, you know. And I actually had the genius idea that if I could spot your inventory, like, I would say I should be a therapist because I'm really good at telling everyone what's wrong with them. And I thought if I could spot it, that meant that I wasn't doing it. But come to find it, it's like, you spot it, you got it, you know, like, that's actually how I, yeah, because I am that way, like, it was really hard to swallow, but, like, now I can see, like, I am selfish, you know, like, I don't know if I ever even heard that word before I got to AA, because if anyone said it, it would just, like, ping off my forehead, be like, nope, not me, nope, so, but, like, I am selfish, I can really act that way, and I'm self-centered, you know. I thought that having an ego, you know, I thought that meant that you just thought you're the greatest thing, but, like, for me, I was always, like, self-loathing, and I'm the worst, and my life's the worst, and that's just as much ego. It's just, like, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, and now today, like, I can fall into going both ways, you know, like, I'm the best and the worst at the same time. Like, I don't know how that's possible, but my head is just not my friend, you know, like, I come up with some major doozies, like, even sober, and, but at my first meeting, I just felt that fellowship, I felt that peace, that maybe these people had a solution, because they were saying things out loud that like, the truth resonates in this way. Like, when someone tells the truth, it, like, hits you, you know? And that language of the heart. And so it wasn't anything I could express, but I just felt so much hope. And, like, maybe there's something wrong with me, and maybe this is, like, where I can get better, you know? Like, maybe my problem is alcoholism. Because my whole life, everyone's like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And I tried so many treatments. I tried going to different doctors, you know, losing weight, changing schools, you know, boyfriends, exercise programs, like, whatever, like, I went through the book, like, I tried so many of those things, you know, like, tonight I'm not going to drink liquor, I'm only going to drink beer, or, like, I'm going to do this combination, like, I'm going to control my drinking and enjoy it, you know, and all those combinations that we come up with, and, but for me, you know, when that phenomenon of craving starts, there's just nothing that can get in the way, like, and, you know, in the book, it talks about, like, this businessman, like, even when he had an engagement favorable to him, like, when he took a drink, all else, like, became secondary. And, you know, like, that story on Christmas Eve, I mean, of course, it'd be beneficial for me to show up for Christmas. If you'd ask me, I love my family, you know. But when I took a drink, there was nothing that could stop me from drinking and taking more and more and more. And I didn't know what would happen. And then I messed up, you know, and ruined the day, you know. So there's just so many things like that. And so I got a sponsor my first night. I started going to meetings every day. I started going to, like, diners and, like, hanging out every day and, like, going to all these AA events and just meeting people. I'd pick up, you know, people every day for the meeting. I had a station wagon at the time. And at that time, I was living in Centerville, Virginia, and most of the meetings I was going to were, like, in D.C. or Maryland. So I'd be like, come on, everybody, like, we're going to the meeting. So I'd pick up, like, all the Virginia girls, and we'd all, like, go up there. And which was awesome. I mean, at the time, you know, I got sober just before my 17th birthday, and I needed, like, fellowship. I needed to have fun. Like, I did not know what to do with myself, you know, so that really helped me, but eventually, like, I really had to start seeking a spiritual solution and really get involved with working the steps. But I really, and for some reason, like, someone told it to me when I was new, like, because I had a really hard time, like, a lot of people from my home group go to Ocean City on the weekends, and, like, I had done so much drinking, like, in the Outer Banks and at Myrtle Beach, like, so much drinking, and so I was like, I can't go to the beach, because I can't go without drinking, and they were like, well, don't worry, like, the more you go with us, like, you'll make sober memories, and so that was, like, something I clung to, and my friends, like, make fun of me, because I still say that a lot, but we'll be, like, my friend Rob from Charlottesville, like, I met him, and we, like, made a 7-layer bean dip together when he had, like, a week sober, and I was like, Rob, we're making sober memories by making this bean dip together. And, but it's true, because now if someone says, like, beach, then I think about all the fun times I've been with my sober friends. Like, I don't remember all, you know, the horrible things, crazy, embarrassing things I did at the beach, you know, before. Like, now I'm filled with so much love and joy from sobriety. And, you know, I still, like, didn't show up to school very much. I wasn't doing very well. But after a while, like, somehow I graduated high school. My parents, like, forced me to fill out my college applications. I got into one school, so I was like, all right, I'll go there. And, but, like, I seriously had so much fear of life and of other people. So my parents, I'm in college, and they had to drive me to class. And that was at 2 years sober. And because I went to George Mason, so it was, like, pretty close to home. And, you know, just terrified, living on campus, hearing people partying, being like, come to this frat party with me. And, like, my AA friends would, like, I thought of it as, like, walking the gauntlet. Like, they'd, like, escort me to my dorm room. I'm like, and then I would, like, read the big book, you know, and just pray, like, God, keep me sober, please. And I did, you know. And so now I have that experience that I can share with other people. And, you know, when I had about 2 years sober, my biggest dream in life, I had never told anyone this because I never thought it would be possible, so why even bother dreaming about it, but I was just like, my biggest dream is to work at Walt Disney World, and I just, like, kind of mentioned that to my sponsor, and my sponsor was like, well, you know, let's see what happens. So I ended up getting into this theater class in college, and the teacher used to work at Walt Disney World, and I was like, it's my dream to work at Walt Disney World, and he was like, well, I can get you an interview, and so I ended up, like, getting into their college program and was able to go live in Orlando for 6 months and do an internship at 2 years sober. And for someone, like, I grew up in Fairfax County. Before I got sober, I'd never driven on the Beltway. Like, I am pretty close to a hermit without alcohol. Give me a little alcohol. I love being the center of attention, but without it, I'm just terrified, you know, like, full of fear. Don't like going places I've never been. So I'd never even ridden on the Metro in D.C. until 2007. That was like 4 years ago. I'd never ridden on a bus. Like, there were so many things because I was just, like, afraid of life, you know. And but going to Florida, like, I was like, yeah. So I was able to make friends in D.C. and go to AA. But, like, I felt like I was diving into a pool and, like, didn't know if I was going to have my floaties on, you know. Like, I knew AA worked in D.C., but I didn't know if it would work in Florida, and it did, you know. It was really hard because, you know, I lived, again, in a situation where people were partying and drinking, and it was attractive, but I was, like, religious about going to meetings and just tried to be really involved in the fellowship there and just do the best I can, or the best that I could, you know, and I stayed sober, and I grew a lot from that because I realized that God is, like, so much bigger than just, like, you know, at first it was, like, my sponsor, then it was, like, my home group, then it was, like, the D.C. area, then I was like, oh my gosh, like, God can be anywhere, you know, and AA works anywhere, and that was just so key for me. Like, it just gave me so much confidence and really helped me to move forward in my life in a lot of ways, and so I became, like, a theater major in college. And, like, some of my teachers when I was younger were like, you're never really going to be able to do theater outside of high school. Like, you're not really acting material. And I was like, okay. But I did anyway, and I, like, proved them wrong and just continued, like, showing up and you know, I always thought, like, I can't do that, I'm sober, you know, but it's completely the opposite. Like, I can do things today because I'm sober. And, you know, like, I had a really rigorous schedule. Like, when I was in college, we'd have plays, and so I'd have to go to 7 a.m. meetings if I wanted to make a meeting. And I'd get off of rehearsal at 11, 12 at night, but I did it, you know. And it wasn't forever. It would just be for, like, 2 months at a time. But I just really learned that if I keep my sobriety first, you know, in my relationship with the higher power, that I can really go anywhere and do anything. And, you know, I was able to sponsor some women, and that was a really awesome gift. Like, I would always end up sponsoring, like, these really random, like, homeless crackhead ladies with, like, no teeth. I don't know why, with, like, tons of children. I was, like, 18, 19, 20 years old. Like, sure, come with me, you know, but, like, I tried, you know, and so, but also, like, I sponsored this lady when I had 7 years. She had had 7 years. She had gotten sober at 17, had 7 years, went back out drinking. She grew up in a nice neighborhood, very similar story to mine, but she went back out drinking for 10 years, and by the time I met her again and she'd made it back to AA, she was, you know, that, like, crippled, old, like, homeless lady with no teeth, you know what I mean? Like, just a wreck. And I just saw, like, the shadow of myself, like, oh my gosh, you know, because it's not like, yay, I have this time sober, I'm fixed, you know, it's like every day I have to work this program, like every day I have to remember that I'm alcoholic and try to give it away to other people, like I'm not ever finished, you know, and so that, seeing her, I'll just like always remember that because, like, yes, like I'm very lucky to be sober and to have such a good life today, but like it could be gone if I drink again, like I'm pretty positive it will be gone, you know, because really, I mean, so many of the things in my life are a result of AA, and I have so many stories. I mean, I've made a lot of mistakes in sobriety. I've done a lot of cool things, you know, like I was able to work the steps, and like for me, I was afraid when I did my fourth and fifth step that it would say, like, my sponsor would be like, well, you're right, you're too good to be an AA, you're such a decent human being. That was not the case. My sponsor was like, whoa, man, like, sounds like you're going to have a lot of amends to make. And I was like, oh, really? So, yeah, and so just bit by bit, like, trying to see myself. I mean, I honestly think, I mean, people say this, like, if I saw all of myself at the same time, I know I would explode, because more is revealed every day about my inventory and about who and what I am, and it's just interesting. And, you know, and the sixth and seventh step, I mean, I really struggle with that, especially, I don't know if that's coincidence, like, through years, like, six, seven, and eight, like, that was, like, a really hard time of just realizing, like, I have to have a higher power that's big enough for everything, you know, like, I was, like, seeking a higher power through, like, men, or through shopping, or through my job, or through food, or whatever, you know what I mean, like, my defects are just, like, wow, like, just anything, fill me up, you know, but the truth is, like, nothing can really fill me up like a higher power can, and that's what I found in AA, you know, like alcohol used to do for me, but it's the same thing in AA, it's just slowly but surely, you know, it's not that quick fix, but thankfully in AA, it's not that, like, all those consequences and the horrible aftermath either, you know, if I just am willing to take the actions, and, and in the eighth and ninth step, you know, I did get sober young, so I didn't have, like, a lot of debt or anything like that, but the people who loved and trusted me, I made it really hard for them to love and trust me, and like I said, I mean, if I did not feel like doing something, I would not do it. I lived based purely on how I felt all the time, and I really felt like it was everyone else's responsibility to make me feel better. I hated my mother so much, and I think really it's just because we're so alike, but I hated her so much, and now when I say that, I mean, I feel nothing but so much love for that woman, so it's just amazing the healing that could happen, and I was able to, like I mentioned, like when my grandfather died, I was able to go to that church service for him, and then I went to Arlington Cemetery where he was buried, put my chip there on his grave. And so that's something I try to do every year. And it sounds like so simple, maybe, but when I went there, I mean, just the action of me showing up for another person, it felt like just so much freedom inside. Like, I felt like he was there and, like, smiling from heaven, you know, smiling from the sky, not, like, looking at me with disappointment, you know. Like, I felt like I could walk free with who I've become and, like, feel really good about that and know that, like, he was proud. And, like, my great-grandmother had Alzheimer's, and no one in my family, like, wanted to visit her, especially not me, because I was like, it's just so hard on me. Like, I just don't want to see her that way. You know, how I feel about it, you know, because she doesn't remember me. But I had a detox commitment. Happened to be across the street from her nursing home. So I would go across the street from her nursing home every Sunday, and I was like, ugh, like my conscience was just wearing on me, and my sponsor was like, you better do it, you know. Because I was listening to this speaker once, and she was like, it's not just become willing to make the amends. It's not just become willing to get better. She's like, if you don't do this, are you willing to drink? Like, are you willing to stay sick? Because by not moving forward on these steps, that's what you're doing. And I was like, whoa, oh my gosh. Like, when she put it that way, I was like, I better take some action. So one day I just pulled in, and, like, I started pulling in to her nursing home every Sunday for about 2 years until she passed away. And that is, like, not something that I'm capable of doing. And even though I'm jumping around, like, I was doing that before I went to Florida. And so when I was working at Disney World, I felt so bad. I was like, what if she realizes, like, I'm not visiting her? I can't communicate that I'm, like, going to Florida. So I would send her a postcard every week. And, like, when I got home to her nursing home, she had, like, all the Mickey Mouse, like, postcards, like, wallpapering her room, you know. And so, like, even though maybe she, like, wasn't all there, like, there was, like, something happening, like, with our spirits that I knew, like, my actions were good, you know. And I probably wouldn't have cared to be a part of something like that, but I just felt so much love, you know. And so I was able to speak at her funeral and show up, and I was the first person there when she passed away. And you know, it's just stuff like that. I mean, I just never was capable of doing anything responsible or being an adult or being dependable, having a backbone, you know. That was just taught through AA. Like, I had, you know, I went to meetings every night. I had service commitments. I learned how to make the coffee. So, you know, one time my mom, she started doing dog shows. And I mean, I like dogs, but I don't really care about dog shows. So, but she, like, asked me to come because she was, like, so proud of this, you know. And all those years she spent going to my softball games and all those things, you know. So I was like, okay, I'll go to this dog show. They're like, we need help in the snack bar. Like, ah, the person didn't show up. And I was like, I'll do it. And so I was, like, making coffee with the urn and, like, just knew how to do it, you know, because of being sober. And they're just like, wow, thank you so much. And I was just like, this would have never happened. Like, it never occurred to me to go somewhere and help out. Like, when I came to meetings, I just, like, assumed the chairs are just there, or, like, somehow they just get put away, but it has nothing to do with me. Like, it just never occurred to me to bring. It always, my first instinct would be, what can I take? Who can I get attention from? How can I feel good now? It's all about me, 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 you know? And so in AA, it's like, I can still get that way today, like, going to meetings sometimes. I can go to a meeting and, like, see my friends or, you know, just whatever, which is great to have friends, but I also have to remember to look out for the people who maybe have never been to the meeting or who look really uncomfortable. Like, maybe they even have more time sober than me, but they just look really uncomfortable just trying to give, you know, like, be there for someone. And so the amends process is just, I've seen, like, the ripple effect of that in my life, because even though we're not perfect, like, there's so many good things going on in my family right now and, like, so much love. And I can only imagine, like, if I wasn't sober, the ripple effect of, like, always having to visit me in the psych ward or, like, calling from jail or, like, what that would have done to my family. But because I've been sober, like, I've impacted their lives in a positive way, and they're, like, impacting other people. And really quickly, I was able, it was, I don't know why, but I just had this, like, sudden realization that I wanted to go to Uganda and volunteer. And so I did that in in September of last year and just got back from Uganda in December. And I could probably talk about that for like a whole, you know, couple hours, which I won't. But that was like this profound experience. But, you know, I was able to get to 4 meetings there. I had to ride a 5-hour bus. It was very dangerous. But they had English-speaking meetings, and there are people from all over the world there. I mean, there's probably like 10 people, but just to know that I'm in East Africa in an AA meeting blew my mind. And like this woman, I went to the World Convention in Texas this summer, and a woman there happened to be the speaker, and she's from Uganda, and she spoke, and I just like lost it. I cried the whole time she spoke, because I've never felt like the presence of a higher power like more profoundly in my life, because I'd already bought my tickets, I already knew I was going to Uganda. And she was saying how she's the only woman, like, in her village, like, in the country, sober. And she just felt so alone sometimes. And I was like, I'm moving there in September. So I mean, she was, like, this beautiful, like, lady in her 60s, like, this beautiful Ugandan woman. So, like, we're probably people who had never mixed, you know, like, I'm 27, like, I don't know, I'm from America, like, I have no business being in Africa, but we were able to get together because of AA, and it was just unbelievable, like, to be of service there. But my dad, like, he was my coach growing up, like, all those years, and I always felt kind of, like, ashamed that, you know, I got kicked off my team, and, like, I never followed through with sports. I just quit after that, after all the effort they had put into helping me. And he's coaching, like, this little league now, a girls, like, 10 and under team, and he was, like, I just see, like, how much you give back in your life, and so I want to be more like you, so I'm, like, coaching this team or whatever, and, so I just feel like it's, like, not me, like, that's where I see, like, the ripple effect, and he's, like, such a great coach, so, like, now those girls, like, get to know my dad, and, like, he's so good with people, and, like, coaching, so, like, who knows, like, what that will bring for them in their lives, you know, my parents live in Woodstock, Virginia, like in Shenandoah County, so it's like kind of a small town, so I don't know, like, it's just pretty cool to see that. So if anything, I mean, I just know that in my life, like, in AA, like, I was able to have a spiritual awakening, and if I take steps, you know, if I take the actions in AA and continue to stay in contact with the sponsor, like, that's what's worked for me, like, I've prayed every day and, like, tried to live this way of life every day, you know. Before, I was used to going to meetings 7 days a week no matter what, you know. Like, well, when I was in Africa, they don't have meetings every hour on the hour like they do in D.C. or whatever. So I immediately had to find something that would help me to stay in emotional balance, stay sober, you know. And thankfully, I mean, I was shocked. I never thought that I could go to another country and stay sober like that, and I did, and I don't know what's next for me. I mean, there's always ups and downs with life, but the constant in my life is AA, and if anything, like, it's just continued. If I say yes, if I show up, my life continues to expand and to get better and fuller and just filled with more of you guys, you know, like, because of being in AA, I mean, I've met people all over the country, all over other countries, because I've said yes and shown up and just try to be of service, you know, like, try to be a force for good instead of just always taking and thinking about me, you know what I mean? So thank you all so much for listening, and thanks for letting me share.